You're listening to Let's Talk Macro,
brought to you by Bandhan Mutual Fund.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Let's Talk Macro, the podcast on macroeconomics by Bandhan Mutual Fund, where we discuss interesting global and domestic macroeconomic topics and events. I'm your co-host, Ahalya, and I've got with me, as always, Srijith Balasubramanian, economist in the Fixed Income Fund Management team. Hi, Srijith. How are you?
I'm good, Ahalya. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, and I have to say quite excited about today's topic of conversation because it is a little bit counterintuitive, if I may say so myself. So just to set the context for everybody, the Strait of Hormuz remains blocked, pressure on the global economy continues, and markets are still oscillating between growth and inflation worries. The price of crude oil is still high and volatile, and so are the prices now of various oil and non-oil products, with pass-through to consumer inflation just being a matter of time, really. There's also the worry about lower supply of some goods. And amidst all of this, somehow, the US economy has continued to be resilient and even consistently surpassed growth expectations. So in today's episode, we're going to be unpacking the drivers of this, like I said, counterintuitive phenomenon, the latest on the US labor markets and inflation, and why all of this matters for India. So Srijith, let's start with unpacking this. The US economy has been witnessing more upward growth surprises recently, and they are surprises. So could you take us through them and the main drivers behind this economic resilience?
Yeah, so most of the growth data this month in the US has been robust. So industrial production, manufacturing, PMIs, and capacity utilization came in strong. And even orders for capital goods, excluding, you know, the chunky defense and aircraft part. The New York Fed's Empire State Manufacturing Index was also solid, and with the orders component rising. And even data like non-farm productivity and retail sales were buoyant. So upward growth surprises clearly. And we know the US economy has been consistently growing above its trend rate of around 2% for a few years now. And the main drivers of this has been, you know, two things, which are basically fiscal policy and AI. Now, on the first one, fiscal, we've seen how the fiscal deficit not just rose sharply during the pandemic, but it continues to remain elevated, you know, beyond the pre-pandemic levels. And it is expected to stay over the next 5 to 10 years, based on even the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office forecast. And this is despite a bit of uncertainty that we have on tariff revenues. And therefore, over the last few years, business debt outstanding to GDP has materially eased. And on the other side, the aggregate household net worth has picked up. And it's also driven by the the buoyant asset markets there. And additionally, this year, if you see, there is higher income tax refunds and certain depreciation-related tax benefits for companies and so on. So the fiscal story has been a major driver of growth. The other part is the AI. Now, business fixed investment has been almost entirely driven by investment in data centers, software, information equipment, and related R&D. And this has been the major contributor to US GDP growth. And we have spoken about this before. This year as well, AI investments could continue to drive growth in 2026 also. Although eventually adoption across sectors and enterprises will matter. But things look okay at least for the rest of this year or maybe into 2026. And moreover, in the equity market, if you see the AI related story, you know, has been percolating from just the tech heavyweights in the US earlier to other supporting sectors now. So be it stocks in construction services, power and cooling infrastructure, backup generators and so on. So it's actually spreading out a bit. In fact, chip manufacturers in South Korea and Taiwan have been doing well because of this AI fund flow there. So the overall story is that US growth remains resilient, and this has been driven by fiscal policy and AI.
You know, those are two very fascinating reasons or growth drivers when it comes to the American context. But Srijith, I remember we had previously also discussed the K-shape in the U.S. consumer story, right? How does that impact the economic growth?
So yeah, that's true. It's true that the high-income groups in the U.S. are doing much better because they also have a wealth effect from, you know, the higher values of their asset holdings. And in fact, data suggests the top 20% of consumers by income in the U.S. holds more than 70% of household wealth. In fact, a recent study by the Atlanta Fed also found that since the COVID pandemic, spending by higher income consumers grew substantially faster than that by the lower income groups. And this is probably why, you know, consumer sentiment data has been weaker than actual data. So you see, for instance, the University of Michigan consumer sentiment has been weaker, but the actual data has been, you know, holding up quite well. And even the AI story, if you see, is concentrated, right? As AI-related imports have risen sharply in the US, while non-AI import growth is actually negative. But all said, the aggregate story is still strong, and the labor market is holding up. And even the hit from the tariffs has so far been lower than expected.
Yeah, so can I just dive deeper on that one point where you said the labor market is holding up, right? How is the stronger economy reflecting on the labor market and on inflation, which is the other important aspect, of course?
Yeah, so the labor market has faced issues like declining participation rate, which sort of got accelerated due to the measures to curb immigration. And even non-farm payroll additions have been lower, particularly if you see the cyclical sectors like manufacturing, construction, and so on. We've also discussed before that the break-even employment growth, which is the monthly job addition needed to keep unemployment rate constant, that is almost close to zero now. And the Fed did put out a paper on this recently. On the other side, if you see, unemployment rate has been flat. And unemployment insurance claims, the weekly claims numbers that we see, have moderated quite a bit in the last 6 months or so. So although the labor market is in an uncomfortable balance, which was, the Fed governor sort of mentioned last time, it hasn't deteriorated of late and it continues to stay buoyant. The other part is on inflation. Inflation has been higher than the Fed's 2% goal for a while. And both producer and consumer price inflation were stronger in April, even excluding the volatile food and energy components. Mm-hmm. Now, although CPI was impacted by an upward technical adjustment in shelter prices in April, the non-housing core services part of CPI, which the Fed looks at closely, picked up further. And even if you look at producer prices, core goods, that is the durable and non-durable consumer finished goods mainly, that moved up. And even the services part of producer prices is now up further. That's actually driven by higher margins received by wholesalers and retailers, and in fact, higher transportation and warehousing costs as well. And again, if you see, various different measures of inflation, like non-oil import price momentum, that has picked up. Measures by other regional feds, like, sticky price, median, trim mean CPIs, etc., they have all started to inch up. So, or personal consumption expenditure price index, which is the PCE price index, which is the Fed's preferred measure, that has several inputs from consumer and producer prices. And like we said, these are rising. And the impact from the prolonged West Asia crisis, which sort of lies ahead, and that will add to this. So core PCE, faces upward pressures. In fact, higher tariffs from last year, mostly absorbed by companies, by taking a hit to their profit margins, so at least to some extent. So which essentially means that the likelihood of higher costs being passed on to consumers by companies now is actually higher.
So, all in all, that has led to the labor market holding up and inflation still lingering above the Fed's target. But at this point in the conversation, there's always the important question of how this matters for us in India, right? So how is all of this activity impacting our economy and policy action, Sridharth?
And that's the most important question. How does it matter for us? How does it matter for India? So the key aspect here is that higher global neutral interest rates since the pandemic. So neutral interest rates have inched up since the pandemic, and the US is a prime example of this. So with consistently high growth, and we've also seen the rise in US Treasury yields. So if you take the US 10-year Treasury bond yield, for instance, this was just 1% plus before the pandemic, and it was had already reached 4% plus before the Iran war, and is currently, as we speak, around 460-470. So growth is robust, labor market is buoyant, inflation is still higher than target and in fact could increase. It is reasonable definitely to expect some hawkishness on rates from the Fed, right? And in fact, three FOMC members dissented in April on the easing bias in the official statement. And even recent commentary by some of the FOMC members suggests some hawkishness. And if you look at market pricing of Fed's rate trajectory also, they've swung from expecting more than two rate cuts, let's say sometime in February, to expecting almost one rate hike now. So all this essentially implies higher global rates that India has to face. And then there are obviously, things like other themes, for instance, AI, which attracts global capital flows. And so RBI's trilemma among, capital flows, exchange rates, and a domestic economy focused monetary policy, that could continue, which essentially implies India will continue to face pressure on the external account and the rupee. And this is because of, like we discussed, the stronger US economy, higher treasury yields, capital outflows to economies benefiting from the AI theme, and now the ongoing West Asia conflict. And on this, if you add our domestic inflation projections, which are actually rising, particularly for the second half of this fiscal year, because the inflation impact from the conflict is yet to be seen in consumer prices. So that lies ahead for us. And so the projections are rising for inflation. In fact, we just had a much higher than expected wholesale price index reading for April. So overall, keeping all these factors in consideration, we currently expect 50 to 75 basis points of rate hikes by the RBI over the course of this fiscal year.
Right. So our entire discussion in the US, AI and the recent conflict is important because it is about the challenges that have been faced by India's external account. Right. Thank you so much, Srijit, as always, for breaking that down, because it's so fascinating to see how activity in one side of the world ends up impacting quite deeply activity on the other side of the world. With that, it's time for me to summarize the key takeaways from our conversation today. So listen up, everybody. Point number one, US has seen upward growth surprises recently, and it has also consistently grown above the trend rate in the last few years. The main drivers of this being fiscal policy and AI, with fiscal expected to remain loose and AI-related investments continuing into 2026, US growth could stay resilient despite higher income consumers doing much better than lower income groups and growth being heavily driven by AI alone. Point number two of note, although the labor market has faced challenges and is in an uncomfortable balance, it hasn't deteriorated of late, with the unemployment rate being steady and unemployment insurance claims falling. Meanwhile, inflation has been higher than the 2% target. Various measures of core consumer, producer, and import price indices have risen recently, and the price impact from the West Asia conflict could impact this even further. Third, why does all of this matter for India? Well, the key aspect is that global neutral interest rates are higher since the pandemic, with the US 10-year treasury yield being a prime example. So if US growth is robust, the labor market is buoyant, and inflation is still high with upside risks, the Fed could turn hawkish on the margin. We see this already in recent commentary by some of the FOMC members and market expectation of rate hikes. The AI theme as well could continue to attract capital elsewhere. So all of this could continue to exert pressure on India's external account. And as inflation also rises due to the prolonged West Asia conflict, we currently expect the RBI to hike interest rates by 50 to 75 basis points during this fiscal year. So a lot happening, which just means there's a lot for us to keep track of in the next episode, when we'll catch you next month. That's it for today. Thank you, Srijit, for unpacking all of this for us, as always.
You're my pleasure.